Hello, this is Down the Back of the Seats. I'm Ellen, cinema manager at Campbelltown Picture House.
And I'm Alistair. I'm a film and theatre maker based on the Isle of Mull.
And Alistair, what is this podcast about?
This podcast explores what happens when the public and public spaces meet. So what's left behind? What's been found that's unexpected? What stories are there to tell? It's tales from behind the scenes at the cinema, theatre, concert hall, wherever people meet, linger and leave things. Or bits.
Okay. And our frequently asked question, which we start each podcast with, is, well, again, as is now becoming a tradition, it's not really a question, it's more of a comment. So our frequently said thing is, I'll just wait for it to come out on streaming then. So back in the day, cinemas used to get films way before they turned up on VHS or the telly or Laserdisc or whatever they were going to turn up on. That way, obviously, if you wanted to see a film, you went to see it at the cinema. And if you wanted to see a film again, you went to the cinema again. And your chance to see it again, apart from that, wasn't going to come for months. To my completely biased mind, this helps everybody. Cinemas get their ticket sales. They not only get their initial ticket sales of people coming to see the film, they get repeat visits, which is crucial. And customers get to see the film on the big screen. And the studios benefit in that you get, you know, for the two reasons before. So cinemas were pottering along quite happily with the release windows being fairly decent. And they were starting to get squeezed. And do you remember Alice in Wonderland, when the release of Alice in Wonderland happened?
The Tim Burton one? No. No, I do not.
Okay, we just blocked that out.
I remember it came to the screen machine and I thought, ooh, screen machine, Tim Burton. I really, Tim Burton, I love, like, for me, I really love Tim Burton's work. A lot of, like, Ed Wood for me as a, growing up was one of the greatest films ever. I just watched it endlessly. Pulled the strings. And so I was a big fan until about the Planet of the Apes, and then I was like, what the hell's happened here? And I've not seen Big Fish, I quite like, but I've not seen anything else by him since then that I've really appreciated. I believe Wednesday is worth seeing, but I've still not seen that yet.
No, I haven't seen
the TV series.
Anyway, so
sorry,
Alice,
I diverge.
Tim Burton is the new Christopher Nolan. So Alice in Wonderland was the first major time when there was just a sort of huge blow up about all this. Odeon, View and Cineworld, they all threatened to boycott the film because the release window was being squeezed from 16 weeks to 12 weeks. So it came out in the cinema and then 12 weeks later you could get it out on DVD. And the excuse was that they didn't want the DVD release to coincide with the Men's World Cup, which sounds a little bit like nonsense to me because the crossover is not going to be huge between those two audiences. Not non-existent, but not huge. But the cinema chains variously backed down, but the debate was very much out there and people were starting to keep an eye on things. So we've gone from the 60s and 70s where you've got around about 5 years between theatrical
and
television.
That's...
I know. And then
there was no home media really to watch at that time.
Exactly. So that was until it came out on television. And then in the 80s, it was sort of a year-ish, 5 to 6 months.
And I remember very, very clearly that because I remember watching View to a Kill, the James Bond movie, on the cinema and thinking, I really want to see this again. And I thought, right, what's the best way to do it? The best way to see it was to record it when it was on the telly, which was a year later. And I still have that video somewhere at my parents', I'm pretty sure, because it contains adverts that were really, really of the time, such as Come to Sunny Yugoslavia, which was just amazing because obviously Yugoslavia no longer exists. Yeah. So yeah, I kept the video for that. So I'll need to go back, find it and encode it. And yeah.
One of the great joys of old videos recorded off the telly is the old adverts and the nostalgia.
Glens, Hutchison's, Robertson's and Steppick, if you're from the west coast of Scotland, yeah.
And then pushing into sort of 90 days for the 2000s and even getting a little bit more squeezed, but not dramatically through the sort of 2010s. And then COVID happened and lots of worse things than this happened during COVID. But the cinema one is that the release windows, they just there was no negotiation leverage anymore, because of course people needed things to drop straight onto streaming platforms, because the cinemas weren't. And once that sort of has, once the box has been open, it's very difficult to get it back in again.
Back.
So Wonder Woman 1984, that came out day and date, theatrical and on demand. So that's a model that is possible to argue for, is it comes out in cinemas and it comes out on streaming, and people who want to see it in the cinemas will go there, people who want to see it in streaming will go there.
But it was Wonder Woman 1984. No one wanted to see it in either the cinemas or on streaming, so there we go.
It was fine.
Was it any good? Because I liked, there were elements in the first one I thought were excellent.
It was, it was fine. There was, I think most films are, fine, but 20 minutes too long. So, and it fell very much into that category.
Weren't our old friend Christopher Nolan and the James Bond movie and Tom Cruise's Maverick very good on this? This is something that they kind of were really fighting the theatrical corner on, weren't they?
Yes. So Christopher Nolan and as you say, Tom and Bond, they have the leverage. There's very few people that have the leverage to say, right, if you want to release my film into cinemas, you cannot release it onto media, because they want their film to be seen in the biggest possible medium. And it's not just an economic decision, but these guys are so big that they don't need to make purely economic decisions. And it's brilliant, and I love them for it. It's really, really appreciated from tiny Campbelltown Picture House. Thanks very much, guys. But I think that your average consumer doesn't particularly realise this. So if you're used to things dropping onto streaming 5 or 6 weeks or less after they come out in cinemas, then you're very happy to wait. And you're not across the various nuances of who's said that you can't release their film onto streaming this and who hasn't. You just sort of, it becomes a natural expectation that if you're really keen on a film, you go to see it once in a cinema, maybe, and then you don't bother again because it's going to turn up on streaming soon. Or if you're if you're sort of a bit ambivalent about a film, then you just wait until you can get it onto streaming. And I completely understand that. I really do. But it's not helpful for cinemas, and it is my livelihood. And I think that the best place to watch a film is in a cinema with an audience, because that is one of the great
shared experience.
It's the shared experience. It's the primeval need to be in a room of other people experiencing art.
In a dark room with flickering lights like a cave fire. You know, it's very similar.
So we'll see where it goes. I don't think there's any going back, really. There's no clawing back the release window. There's only different models and different ways of dealing with it. We can't survive.
Economically, sorry, you're going to say yes.
I was going to say, so Mission Impossible is coming out. It's come out as we record this. And it's the sort of film that you have to see in the cinema. And it'll do extremely well. Top Gun Maverick did extremely well. The Bond film did extremely well. But these are once every... Stop it. I see you want to jump in and say how much you hated it.
Economically, I remain silent.
It is one of the greatest films that's ever been. Anyway, and that's great. But cinemas cannot survive on one film every 6 months.
No.
We need the averagely selling films as well. And we're struggling. And as we record this again, Empire Cinemas has gone into administration. Cineworld has been teetering on the edge of we don't know what for a while. Independents are now, I think, the better business model in terms of cinemas, but nobody builds a cinema in order to make money. It's got to be a labour of love first, and then you try and have the cinema wash its face. I'm very lucky that I work for a charity, and that my aim is to have the cinema wash its face, and making billions of pounds is not something that's going to happen, nor that something that we would particularly want. So, yes, I think ambiguity is the issue at this point of when some things drop and some things don't, and nobody really knows what's going on, so they just assume that it's going to come out pretty soon. So what do we do, Alistair? What's the answer?
I think we go back to the old year-long model where you've got to wait for a year to see the film.
we haven't even touched on piracy, which makes that model completely null and void now.
Yes.
Because the longer people have to wait, the more likely they're going to pirate it, and then nobody gets the money.
I do like the sense of anticipation. That's one of the great things about a film is, oh, here it comes, and you're waiting for it for years, and then when you've seen it, you're like, this is all right. But
this is how I'm feeling. This is what I'm worried about Barbie at the moment, because I'm so excited. And if it's anything other than the greatest experience of my life, then the whole thing is going to be a massive disappointment.
Exactly. You're going to really regret that tattoo.
My Greta Gerwig tattoo.
It's over your brow. I love you, Greta. in mirror, so you only can see it when it's in the... I love the anticipation of it. Like, so the new Indiana Jones movie, I'm really excited to see that. I live on Mull, and we have a local film society here, Mull Film Club, who are really great, who show lots of different things. They had a local hero for its 40th anniversary there just the other weekend at the Harris Hall in Tobermory. I couldn't make it because it was my wee man's birthday around that time, and we had family here, which was lovely. But, you know, that's an older film, again, and we showed When 8 Bells Toll. I'd helped them out with that previously. Again, that's an older film. So they're not showing contemporary films. They'll show films that are on domestic release or they can get a license for within the releasing structures. But there's nothing, you know, that has cinematic release. They can't show that. What we do have for our films that are in cinematic release is an amazing thing called the Screen Machine.
Yeah.
And the Screen Machine.
That's another one of my favourite cinemas. Going back to that conversation.
Oh, I love it. I just love it. I should actually have said that as one of my favourites, because it's that Screen Machine, for those of you who don't know what it is, it's an articulated lorry that has a cinema on the back of it, and it pulls up in rural locations, and the Arctic kind of expands out into this wonderful cinema. And, oh, it's just great. You can go and see, you know, they've screened all sorts of things from the past, but they also screen things from this moment in time, so they've got the latest releases, but they also have the facility to show films locally, you know, things that were made locally. So my films have been screened across Scotland, and which has been a great honour, so I'm really chuffed about that. But they also have you know, the satellite system on the top of the lorry, so that if there is a live broadcast thing from the National Theatre or somewhere, you know, one of these special live event things, they can do that as well. So the Screen Machine is absolutely superb. So I love that as a model of you know, an itinerant cinema is a really special thing. But we were thinking about buying Guardians of the Galaxy 3 for Cole for his birthday. And he wanted to watch Puss in Boots for maybe the sixth or seventh time with his pals, which I'm chuffed to bits, because, you know, to have a favourite film is a really great thing, and so to share that with your friends and they all loved it was really great. None of them had seen it before, so it was a really special thing for him. So a couple of days later, we're like, well, let's buy Guardians of the Galaxy, and then we looked, it was $13.99, which actually, if you consider that as the price of a family cinema ticket, that's amazing value. You know, but that's for sitting watching at home. But I thought, actually, it's going to be on Disney Plus within probably a month after it's kind of digital release like that. So thought, well, we can just hold off for that. So we've part of the streaming thing rather than buying things on a platform. So it's a difficult one. There are loads of different options, loads of different models, and you just go for what you feel you want to choose, what suits best at that moment in time, which it's the customer's marketplace now.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're coming at this very much in terms of, I'm coming at this certainly very much in terms of cinema is best. But also, I mean, the flip side of it is to think of it from the filmmaker or the distributor who want the most people, the most diverse group of people to see their film, not just those that can afford to come to the cinema, have access to a cinema, feel welcome in a cinema. So I should probably say that I do understand that the more people see films, that's a good thing too. I'd just rather they saw them in cinemas and then saw them much later on. Obviously I don't have an answer, because there are much smarter people than me who are arguing this.
This is the tricky thing with cinema as well. I was talking about this with an online contact around the time that the Bond release was put back during the pandemic. And cinema is a really interesting economic model because obviously the films are owned by the studios who make them and the producers and all that who make them. But actually they're owned in a very personal way by the audience. And it's the audience that buys into them and will put their money towards them. And there's a sort of disparity between the cold financial reality of financial ownership and the emotional ownership of something. So Campbelltown Picture House is great for showing films that mean a lot to your community again and again, which is really great because it increases the audience's emotional ownership of the film, but it also increases the audience's emotional ownership of Campbelltown Picture House. You are a community cinema, and that is your community coming to it, which is fantastic.
Well, I think this is where the model is changing. Prior to COVID, then chains were kings, and now it doesn't seem to be sustainable anymore, and I'm sure somebody will figure it out to make it sustainable. But now indies are kings, I think. They're people who don't just want to go to the cinema, they want to go to their cinema. And Campbelltown is very much community owned, both financially and emotionally. There's people who've bought their children, who are now bringing their children who were bought as children. Obviously, it's been around for 110 years. So I think...
Yeah, you've been there with your grandparents, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the likes of us will survive, I think. But it'll be extremely interesting and concerning to see what happens to the industry as a whole and how it morphs and changes. But we've been saying that cinema's dying for... People have been concerned about cinema dying. When television came in, when VHS came in, every time this happens, then it's, has got to be the death of cinema. And it hasn't yet.
I remember in 1990 watching I was left with one of my mum's friends where they went off and had an adventure doing something. I remember watching a TV programme, it was like Film 1990 or whatever it was, with Barry Norman. Saying the 80s was the decade of the sequel. And, you know, what does this mean for cinema? Are people going to still go to the cinema if it's more sequels? Do you really want another sequel to, you know, Lethal Weapon or whatever it was at the time was the new, and there's Lethal Weapon 56 will be out soon, I'm sure. But
we're in the era of the remake, if you're taking that.
Is there a remake of Lord of the Rings coming or something? I think I read about this. What? It's like, that was only 20 years ago.
A bit of a tangent, we may leave it in. You've seen who's developing the next Famous Five film, haven't you? I think we've spoken about that before.
Is that Nicholas Winding Refn? You mentioned that. You mentioned this in the chat the other day on the phone. That's absolutely insane.
I love it.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be the most bizarre thing. It'll probably be the most wholesome thing you've ever seen. But have you seen who is directing the next live version of Bambi?
Please don't say it's Lars von Trier. Please don't say it's Lars von Trier.
Imagine. No, it's even more... I think it's even more weird. I'll give you a clue. It's one of my future wives.
Greta Gerwig?
It's not Greta Gerwig. That would sort of figure after...
Andrea Arnold?
It's Sarah Polley.
That'll be brilliant. Oh,
I know. She's doing... It's such
she's just the best.
I mean, so intrigued by her decision to do this.
She is the best.
Oh, it's really going to be wonderful because she is the best, and everything she does is the best, and I love her. But
she is amazing. Genuinely one of my favourite filmmakers. I'm so, so impressed with her work.
Yeah, me too. But Bambi. Anyway, so that's in the list of people who you wouldn't expect directing films that you wouldn't expect them to direct.
That's really cool. Yeah, thank God it's not Lars von Trier. That would be terrifying.
Oh, God, imagine.
We have now with us a guest, and it's noted stand-up and very dear friend, Viv G. Hello, Viv, how are you?
Hello, Alistair. Hello, Ellen. I'm very well, thank you. Yes, how are you both?
All right, not too bad. Yeah, pretty
good. Good.
Now, Viv, we've known each other for 13 years, but I did see you something like 20 years ago on stage when you were doing.
Yes, and you followed me for like 8 years till you tracked me down and got me in your panto. Yeah. I know.
Got me in my panto.
Only fan.
Oh, no. So we worked together, and you know, we had the experience of creating a panto for touring in the east side of Glasgow, and and east and north and south of Glasgow, which was so, so special. And the audiences were among the nicest audience and most vital audiences I've ever met. They were just incredible. And so the focus of this podcast is, as you know, about things left behind and encounters with people and things. So do you have any stories for us of random encounters or things left behind at all?
Yes. I was thinking about, I bumped into Christopher Eccleston, and I was trying to remember what year this was right now.
Immediately named the celebrity involved. I love it.
Immediately. Yes. because the point, I didn't realize he was a celebrity and everybody else did when I met, if you see what I mean. Yeah. And I think it was around about when The Second Coming came out, which I can't remember when that was, but that's probably because it's never happened. But, I can't remember. Is it 2001 or something? Anyway, I was at the Traverse Bar of a lunchtime, which I don't usually do actually, with a group of actors that I'd bumped into. And one of them that I knew was talking to this guy who he introduced me as Chris. And I went, oh, hi, Chris. And then our conversation sort of drifted away and it was just me and Chris talking. And I thought, oh, this guy's quite a handsome guy. He seems quite nice. And we sort of made jokes, got on really well. And he said something about concrete. And I went, oh, it's cement to be. And he was laughing. And I thought, that's a terrible joke. I can't believe he said that. And so he wandered off. And then this girl I knew who was a stage manager came back. And she went, oh, my God, I've just seen Christopher Eccleston. I went, what? I love him. Where? And she says, oh, he just passed me. I don't know where he's gone. And then she went away and he came back. And we carried on talking and I still didn't realise. And then a group of the people I knew all got this table and they all sat down. And I was getting a lift back to Glasgow later, so I was only staying for a little bit. But as I sat down, Christopher Eccleston was away at the other end of the table and he raised his pint glass as if to say cheers. And I raised my glass. And as I raised it, I thought, oh my God, that's Christopher Eccleston. I've been talking to him. Oh my God. And then a few minutes later, my lift was saying, that's us going now. So we went up and there was like this line of people queuing to say goodbye to him, which felt a bit naff, but I thought, I'll say goodbye. I was talking
to
the
audience.
And as I says goodbye to him, I says, I've just realised who you are. And then I felt like a total dick. And so I said quickly afterwards, mind you, you're always someone, aren't you? He just looked at me and went, yeah, you're always someone. And that was it. And I thought everything shattered. I seemed like a person who wasn't affected by fame and suddenly I was an idiot. But he was so handsome in real life, I didn't recognise him. Not that he didn't look handsome on telly, but he looked more so. And
He's been here in Mull. He was in, I think there was a, had a friend who was on tour and he went on tour with them just for a bit of a holiday and he was in Bennessen and he was just, really apparently very lovely and very addicted to running. He's a big runner.
Really? Right.
Yeah. I only heard the nicest things about him. You've also met other famous people as well. Sorry, I'm going to milk you for stories now.
No, absolutely. So when you say things left behind, is it mostly about famous people
so far it's mostly been about poo, but so I'm glad that we're now talking about
people have left poo behind. I was, and it would have been in the 90s, it would have definitely been in the 90s, and flatmate, I'd lost my key for the flat, so I went in and I was like jumper and baggy jeans and which wasn't trendy then but it is now, but it was just, you know, and everyone was in club gear and I went into the sub club, and I went in to get the keys for my flat off my flatmate who was an actor and working with this soap star, and the soap star says, oh, you're getting a taxi back to your flat, I'll join you because I'm going back to the Hilton. And I went, oh, yeah, that's fine. Chat. And I mean, I don't remember the chat or anything apart from when we got to his Hilton, he sat for ages looking at me and I was thinking, fuck, this is your hotel, it's fine. He threw down 20 quid, shouted, you bitch, and slammed the door with all his might and got out of the taxi. So I had the most awkward taxi ride back to my house. Yeah, as if I'd done something wrong. So he obviously thought he was going to get his end away and I was being a princess.
Yeah, was he expecting, did he think
I was going to get out to his hotel? He thought I was just, it was a line. Yeah.
Wow. Does he think if you say, "Oh, I'll share a taxi with you, I'm heading that way anyway," does he think that's a clear indication?
Yes. Yeah. But it was I was just absolutely, what? Eh?
And what an astonishing, what mindset that's.
Yeah, so it was the weirdest thing.
Men, yeah.
God. And
it's a lot.
I don't even know what my flatmate said afterwards, if he said anything about it or if I said anything about it. But I probably didn't, because I probably thought I did do something wrong. Do you know? Oh, no, I probably thought, oh, yeah. God, did I?
No, you just existed as a woman in the world.
Yes, exactly. I mean, as I do say that I didn't realise that for years I was sexually harassed till I'm no longer sexually harassed. And I'm going, oh, that was changed.
All those things that I laughed off between the ages of 18 and 30. And now I realise,
oh, see, exactly.
Yep.
That's what I've lost. Good thing to lose. Yeah. I'm doing a fringe show. It's a new venue called Leith Depot, which is down Leith Walk, because I've been doing gigs there of a Wednesday evening, and there's such lovely staff, and it's a lovely club, that it's got a wee venue next door, and it's now where the trams pass. So it's suddenly opened up the whole area because the new tram passes right by it. And I'm on at 2:30 from the 4th to the 14th of August. And there's other shows on throughout the whole festival, and my show is called Old Dog New Tricks because I plan to make myself write as much new material as possible to make myself do it, which I have been doing. But I don't think you can teach a dog new tricks apart from if you have got really good biscuits. So I've been eating lots of biscuits.
Do you remember our Merin, our old spaniel?
Yes.
So she, in her last years, we got a bell for her to kind of press if she wanted to go out.
Oh my goodness.
She ignored it. But
but she knew what you wanted her to do. She just couldn't be bothered.
She in her latter years, she picked up her food bowl with the mouth and would go up to the bell and say, okay, that's where I want to go. I want to go out. And so it's like, that was brilliant. And
that
then
is so cool.
She got so skilled at communicating with it that she said to Georgia one day, right, here's my bowl, come with me. Georgia went with her. And then she went, here's the door. I want to go out the door. Okay. She then went, where are you going to go? And she went up to the car and she went, tapped the car with the bowl.
Oh my God.
And Georgia opened the boot. She dropped the bowl, jumped up of the boot and just sat really happy. So
I just loved, oh my goodness, that's brilliant. Yeah,
dogs are the best.
They are. Yes, my dog's birthday was yesterday. You know that way that you think, I know it's ridiculous, but I should mark it. We should. He's got no idea. We just that way. You just, I'll just keep saying, anyone I meet, he's 8 today. You know, it's his birthday today. You know, it's, you know.
Okay.
Get out my garden.
That's not a dog turd.
it turned to poo, Ellen, you're right. It got there.
Oh, it always does. It's the satchel influence.
It is. It's a bad satchelance.
Thank you so much, Viv. That was just fantastic.
I love it.
All the best for the French run. Oh yeah.
Totally. Especially when they're fully named. Absolutely brilliant. Right, shall we wind down?
Shall we Nicholas Winding River down?
Call back, love it. If you would like to get in touch with us with your stories, please do. We are on downthebackoftheseats@gmail.com or on the various socials media at downthebackoftheseats.
Thank you so much for listening. See you again soon. Cheers.